big man. I just wanna fight with everyone else. You're masquerade. I don't wanna be a part of your parade. Everyone deserves a chance to walk with everyone else.
It takes time to make a movie, but as far as I know, none have been shot over as long a period as Richard Linklater's Boyhood. Each year, for 12 years, he met up with the same actors to capture scenes of a family evolving through good times and bad. Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette star as the divorced parents, Mason Sr. and Olivia. The director cast his own daughter, Lorelei, to play the older sister, Samantha, and he chose a 7-year-old unknown boy named L.R. Coltrane to play Mason Jr., the one through whom everything is filtered. I'm truly excited to have this opportunity to speak with both Richard Linklater and L.R. Coltrane on our show today. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah, good to be here.
Richard, how long did it take you to come up with what is the completely unorthodox idea of making a movie?
I think about 2 years. I was trying to make a film about growing up. I had been a father for about 6 or 7 years. And, you know, having a kid puts you in that mindset. So I was thinking, oh, childhood, you know, what an interesting time. And, oh, I got to make a movie about that. And then also kind of about parenthood. But I couldn't really find my spot. You know, no one talks about it. But when you think of, like, kid movies, you're really stuck with the physicality of the age of the kid. You can't really ask a 7-year-old, oh, now you're 10 in the senior. Like a novelist can just write about the whole thing. So I'd almost given up on the idea when this idea hit me. Oh, what if we filmed a little bit every year and we could kind of have that whole broad canvas to tell the whole story of growing up? Because I didn't have any big moment. It was all this little collection of intimate moments. You know?
A lot of people have wondered about similarities with the Michael Apted's 7-Up series, but I was thinking more about watching Jean-Pierre Léaud grow up from The 400 Blows until all the films that followed, both by Truffaut and Godard.
I think that's probably closer because it's fictional. You know, the documentary is a documentary. You stop back in on people and interview them and all that. I mean, those 28, 56 up, those are amazing, and I think they show the power of cinema, that it can, you know, a recorded reality of a person is a pretty profound thing. But this is something else altogether. You know, it's telling a story. So, the Truffaut things, but they jump 20 years, those four films, which are amazing. But.
Well, other films that have been cited are Fanny and Alexander and Orson Welles' The Magnificent Ambersons. It's been pointed out that you belong to the last generation of filmmakers whose education came from the art house cinema of the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Oh, no, that's kind of a sad thought. I hadn't thought of it that way. But, yeah, I grew up – or not grew up. When I was an adult, I got interested in film and was going to the old, you know, landmark double features of the, you know, the great films, 35 prints and all that.
Ella, did you have any idea what you would be getting yourself into when you started on this project?
I mean, not entirely. Especially, you know, now in the – in the wake of the film being released, I could have never expected all of this. But, I mean, I understood definitely to an extent. I was very excited, you know. It was something I definitely wanted to do and was intrigued. You know, I understood kind of how bizarre the idea was, but there's also no way to understand how long 12 years is as a 6-year-old.
Had you done any acting before that?
Very little. I had a resume and a headshot, and I was in one indie film in Austin and a few, you know, commercials, but nothing major.
When did it become clear to you what you had committed yourself to? during the second or third year?
I'm still wrapping my head around that, I think, to be honest. But I mean, it was a very gradual thing, you know. I think maybe halfway I started to kind of just realize how big of an impact, you know, the project could have on me.
It must be in an odd way similar to when you look at old pictures of yourself in a photo album. Yeah. But in this case, you're not seeing just you; you're seeing a character you're playing.
Yeah, it's strange. It's definitely. I mean, there's a lot of me that's directly expressed, but there's also this kind of artistic representation in a way as well.
Richard, what were you looking for in The Boy, who is such a crucial role? He was 6 years old. You can't tell whether a six-year-old is going to be able to continue to grow as an actor.
Yeah, people always ask, well, what if he grew up to be a bad actor? What if he this? What if he that?
Or if he became a troubled kid and wound up going to jail?
Exactly. Who knows the future? I just, at that age, you're casting the parents also, in addition to this kind of very intriguing, mysterious kid who I liked the way he thought and talked about music and art and movies. And, he had this kind of, I just liked his thought process.
So that was what the audition process
was
like?
Yeah, we just, a lot of conversations. Yeah, I just was trying to get at the essence of him. But I was, because I knew the film had to kind of meld with who he was at some point. So it wasn't like I just showed up 1 year and something was different. We were kind of in touch. And 1 year is really just an incremental thing in a 12-year project. So it was always going to slowly bend kind of. If he would have grown up to be a 250-pound linebacker, it would be kind of a tonally similar, but it would just be about that in a certain way. So it would just be a different movie. But I knew it was a huge decision. It felt like the biggest decision I had ever made, like artistically.
Did you see each other when you weren't shooting?
I think occasionally. We live in the same town, so, as often as possible or whenever it was natural. But, you work so intensely in the couple weeks we would be rehearsing and then shooting for a few days. But it's kind of, time is different. People say, have you seen Eller lately? Yeah, I just saw him the other day. And ask Eller, no, I haven't seen him in forever. Because I think, it's 10 months ago. Yeah, I just saw him.
I'd imagine that Eller and Lorelai had a lot of free time. But what about Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette, whose schedules could get pretty busy?
Yeah.
Weren't you taking a big chance that everyone would be available?
I know. It was logistically, it was always a challenge. As soon as we finished 1 year, it was like, okay, let's start looking at our calendars. When can we do this again? Ethan, oh, you're doing a play, and then you're making a movie, and Patricia,
television.
You're on a show, which is about the most restricting thing you could be involved in. And so, they would fly in. We would talk a lot on the phone, and we would work over that year that we weren't shooting. And so sometimes by the time she flew in, we would just get to rehearsing, and we're in the hotel room late rehearsing and shooting the next morning, and then she has a flight to catch a day and a half later. But we always made it work. And even though we were sort of everyone's side project, kind of by definition, the adults, everybody was really dedicated. This meant a lot to everybody involved. The crew also, everybody was kind of, the investment was only growing.
They made a commitment to to the dream that you had.
Yeah,
but you also make it in other movies. You made a couple of Before Sunset movies, Fast Food Nation, and Bernie over that period.
I made a lot of movies. School of Rock. I made a lot of movies.
While you were doing this?
Yeah, well, this, I work probably a couple months a year total on this. The numbers are crazy. We spent a year, if you added up, a year in pre-production, 2 years in post-production, which is, you wouldn't get that schedule on any movie.
Why did it take 2 years in post-production?
Well, you just add it up. Every year we would edit what we shot and attach that to everything before it, edit that, sit with it, it just takes long.
And then did that, when you had, let's say, the first 4 years together, did that automatically give you a sense of where you wanted to go in the fifth year?
Always, yeah. In film, it was just such a luxury to be able to think, to shoot, edit some more, and then think for months and months and months. Film doesn't really give you that. You're in that production / manufacturing stage, and sometimes it's just running over you. You're trying to stay a step ahead of it. But to be able to back away, think about it, and, okay, is this working the way I wanted? What does this film need? Is this... do I need to beef up this part of the relationship? Oh, I think we need a little more of that. It's just an incredible luxury to have that time.
On the other hand, you were shooting on a very tight budget, so you pretty much had to hope that every take was the only the perfect take.
Yeah, there's not a lot of there's no longer version of this movie. Put it like that. The three days a year we got to shoot was we used almost all of it.
Did you have a sense of the ending somewhere near the beginning?
Yeah. No, I always knew it ended because the 12 years is based on the first through 12th grade, this kind of grid we're put on in childhood about our public education. But
you knew that it was going to end with him graduating from high school?
With him going to college, So then I had the last shot in mind. He's up in a mountain. He's met some friends at his new college, and they're just up in there. And I knew that was the last shot, probably by year two or three.
Eller, how much did your own life influence the character of Mason?
I mean, more and more as the years went on, I think, you know, as Mason, you know, kind of required more input, I was also growing up and had more input to give. So it kind of just happened naturally that, you know, as Mason was put in these more kind of emotionally dramatic situations, I had situations to compare these things to, and very little of it is direct. I mean, his life was very different from mine. But
your parents don't resemble Mason Sr. and Olivia?
I mean, ironically, my father actually is in Alaska right now, but
and he is a musician.
And he is a musician, but he's still a musician. He never bought the minivan. They were married for much longer, but that said, you know, I mean, that's kind of what's amazing about it, is that even though the specific situations are very different, I could always find a reflection for what he was experiencing emotionally to call from.
Were you doing other acting work at the same time,
or not much?
Was this it?
This was pretty much it.
Rest of your life was just being a kid.
More or less, yeah. I mean, I continued to go to auditions for a few years, I think, but at a certain point, I was just happy working on this.
You were homeschooled.
I was.
Did that give you more time or less time?
More. Gave me all the time in the world.
It's nice to be able to, hey, Eller, let's go have lunch. You can't call up most, like, high school age students. Let's go have lunch tomorrow. And they're always in school. But right. he could go have lunch and talk for several hours about the movie. It was kind of nice.
My guests are Richard Linklater, who is the director, writer, producer, whatever, of Boyhood, which opened today. To astoundingly great reviews. Manola Dargis called it a masterpiece in today's New York Times. Eller Coltrane is the boy of Boyhood. He stars as Mason Jr., and it's at the IFC Center, the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and the Bam Harvey Theater in Brooklyn. Did many people know that you were doing this over this 12-year stretch?
We tried to keep it secret. I think an agent of one of the actors told somebody, and there was a Variety story, year one, actually, kind of the idea. So it got listed on IMDb. So, I mean, no one knew about it, but maybe when I had other films come out, I would get asked about it. As time went on, there was a slow little undercurrent of people who knew about it, who kept asking about it. So I had about 7 or 8 years of, when's that? What is that film? Is it coming out? And then about a year ago, Ethan, when he finished shooting.
Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, he couldn't help himself. He was talking about another film that he had coming out, but he went on a spiel about he had just finished this, and then then everybody knew it was coming out, which was fine because we were premiering at Sundance. So.
Well, it's incredible to watch the kids grow up, but it's also incredible to watch the adults change, grow up in some
ways. Still growing up, you know. Yeah. That was kind of the point. You don't quit growing, you know. They're always also maturing very much.
Eller, since this film was shot to some degree on the QT over all those years, it must feel weird to suddenly be talking about it to so many people, especially when in some ways it's really intimate. Am I making you feel self-conscious here?
I mean, I'm getting used to it, definitely. But it is. I mean, it's very strange. It's just been this kind of, you know, this very personal thing that we've just kind of been working on, you know, among what became very close friends. And
were there ever clashes about how your looks changed over the years? Did you ever object about how they wanted you to look?
No. I mean, Rick was always very, you know, very gracious and, you know, most of those haircuts are my haircuts. You know,
it was just the one time we made you not cut your hair,
so they could buzz it. You know,
in the movie,
your hair gets shaved off. Yeah.
In the movie, the stepfather makes him get a haircut.
But as a result, I was happy to have my hair cut by that point. You know, it's very hot in Texas.
You're wearing your own clothes as well, so
a lot of it.
As we went on. At the beginning, those weren't your clothes. You know, we had to dork up. Eller was much cooler than the kid at the very beginning of the movie. We had to make a more normal Mason than what Eller really was, which was his taste was far beyond your basic 7-year-old.
I'd imagine it must have been daunting to get a film company to commit to financing something as daring as this. since, as we pointed out, it's never been done before. Maybe I'm sure right now somebody is already starting a 12-year project.
I don't know. Yeah, who knows? Or a 5-year project. Or who knows what they might be doing. But, yeah, it's a daunting thing to come aboard, and I got very lucky with IFC Films.
Well, here. How would you describe your plans to executives?
I could just describe what it would feel like to watch the movie. That was very clear to me. You would just see this family over 12 years. You would see the kids grow up. You would see the adults age and change. And they sort of got it on a storytelling level. That's kind of a simple idea. But the risks, if you want to look at it like that, of taking on a project, because there's so many things that could go quote-unquote wrong. What if someone quit the film? What if something happened? You know, so they, like me, just chose not to look at it that way and just go, I think that's cool. Let's try. Let's take that risk.
Did you have this idea before you started seeing the Before trilogy as something that would continue over the years? Because to some degree, they are related.
They're sort of flip sides. They're definitely related. They're these two kind of lifetime film kind of projects. But I think actually the fact that Ethan and I had committed to this in 01 and we were shooting this in 02 and just we were on board for this kind of 12-year life project, it gave us a little courage to maybe jump back into Celine and Jesse when we shot that in 03.
Well, you couldn't have had Julie Delpy in this film.
No, I would have liked
to. As wonderful as she is.
Yeah, it would have.
Well, Patricia Arquette is fabulous.
This is so, like, rural, you know, kind of American, you know, I don't know where to
fit. I have to tell you, when I saw it, I had not read about the film. So I was astounded by how you found actors who looked just like...
I love that. Isn't that great?
Yeah,
I love that feeling.
Because usually you see there's this dissolve. And then you see somebody who is supposed to be the same character a couple of years later, and you're aware that
you buy
they don't
into
look that
the
much
thing,
like.
Because you got to get an older person, yeah. You just buy into the conceit.
But Mason and Samantha, and in fact the adults as well, they were all really obviously aging.
That's wonderful. You got the total clean slate experience.
I insist on that when I see a film.
I
don't like to read press notes in
that's
advance.
Beautiful.
Alar, you said that at one point that the film shoots were your school.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's.
What did they teach you?
I don't know so much. I mean, just having I think that kind of outlet, you know, and this kind of constant reflection to kind of go back to and use to explore, you know, not just myself but just you know, life and time and how to you know and. Being taught how to, you know, kind of collaborate on creating a character and a universe and a story is a very valuable thing to have, I think.
Well, it's one thing to be in a film and make believe that you are the child of a couple during the course of a couple of weeks
couple
of shooting
months, yeah.
or a couple of months of shooting. But in this case, you had two sets of parents.
Yeah.
Or even more because you
had a couple
of stepfathers as well.
I also had the whole... Yeah. You know, Richard and the whole film crew.
It takes a film crew to raise a child. You know?
And then you had a sister of sorts. Richard, what led you to cast your daughter Lorelai as Mason's sister Samantha? Was that a natural decision?
Yeah, it was completely natural. So natural, it wasn't even mine. I think she pretty much grabbed the part. That was her very much at that age. She's kind of special. It was a fun little life project for us too, but it was really natural. It wasn't a big deal. She had grown up on movie sets. For her to be in one of my movies or to be working with me, it was just this little sidebar fun thing we were doing in life. But
she didn't wish that it was called Girlhood and it would have been about her instead.
We did have, I don't know if you remember, we had an April Fool's joke one time. We were just happened to be meeting and we met, and it was about year three. It says, "Oh, Ellery, we have to tell you something. The film's really going to be about Lorelai. You're now the supporting character." And you got a little look on your face, and he goes, "April Fool's." You were like, you were on to us. I don't think we sold the joke very well.
I remember that. That's really
like year two or three. It was Lorelai's idea, but maybe secretly she did wish we were.
You said there aren't a lot of outtakes. Was it just as important to know what you were going to show and what you weren't going to show when you're doing this? Because the audience fills in all of the intervening months as we go from year to year.
The months, the year. everything that happens off screen, what happens before the movie even begins, you know, the separation of the parents. We don't see that, you know. I wanted it to feel like the kid's point of view, you know, and how you just don't know much as a kid about what, why your parents are doing things. You just see the result. You're affected by the result. So there's a certain mystery to a lot of the off-screen activities and the time ellipses, but that's kind of how your memory works, too. You were just here, and then you were there.
Well, the editing is seamless.
Yeah, that was certainly the goal. And even in the film, I was trying to not hit the big, big moments that, you know, are supposed to be. You know, the first kiss, the even graduation, and all these things. They just, I don't know. I was going for much more intimate things that would be your own memories, not the bigger moments.
And people have talked about this as a realistic film, but realistic can often mean boring. It isn't boring.
Yeah.
Eller, what was it like the first time you saw the finished movie? When did you see it?
I saw it right before Sundance. I had never seen any of the footage throughout the process, and
it was a total surprise.
Yeah, it was, because I mean, to be honest, I had kind of allowed myself to become removed from the fact that it was ever gonna be finished. You know, I think that was kind of part of the benefit of it being so long term and just the nature of it, that I was able to just be lost in the process. And so it was kind of a surprise when it came time to watch it, and it's incredibly surreal. I've seen it quite a few times more now, and it really just gets more strange every time.
Do you want to do more acting, or do you want to pursue a career in the arts?
Both. I mean, I really enjoy acting, and I really enjoyed collaborating on, you know, creating this project. So
You didn't know whether he was going to become a football player or whether he was going to become an artist.
I had a feeling when I was making that choice. I met a lot of future football players, class presidents, you know, kids who are very smart, very, you know, gung-ho. And I liked Eller because he wasn't like that.
He is smart.
Very smart and very thoughtful and sensitive. And I just thought, his parents are artists, and I just thought, okay, let's go that path.
Ethan Hawke said that it was the first time in his life that he's been sad when a movie comes out. Are you glad it's over?
No, I mean, it's very beautiful to share it with people, but definitely at the same time, it's bittersweet to be done with it. It
doesn't feel like it's over, actually.
Did you choose the music? The music also it tells the story to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, music's a powerful demarcator of a certain time and place, for sure.
We all know where we were when we heard a certain song
from
our past.
Absolutely.
These are the songs you were listening to, Ella?
Not me. But perhaps other people my age.
Ella Coltrane stars as Mason Jr. in Boyhood, which opens today at the IFC Center, the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and the Bam Harvey Theater in Brooklyn. Richard Linklater wrote and directed. And I thank both of you for being on our show today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, great being here. Thank you. Now it's all out and you know.